When you're a world-renowned broadcaster like Ron Van Dam, you are always on the lookout for paparazzi. I mean, they have to show up eventually, right? I mean, the guy's been at this for decades. He can't keep hanging out at that Starbucks waiting for someone with a camera to show up. Number one, he doesn't like the coffee. And number two, the baristas all call him that weird guy. And buying crazy designer hats in the hopes that somebody's going to notice? That's getting kind of expensive. Well, hang in there, Ron. You never know. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
What do you want from me?
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Okay, all right, sure, why not? Yeah, okay. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? If I were in a police lineup, I'd be the one on the left, just in case that happens. Thank you for stopping by. This won't hurt. This show will not give you long COVID, much to the dismay of many people. And how long is long COVID, by the way? 20 feet? 30 feet? How long must it be? One of the drug companies, Moderna, Pfizer, Papaluka, I don't know which one, came up with a pill now, a drug that you can take if you have long COVID and have lost your sense of taste and smell. This will actually get those senses back again. And if you're married to somebody that can't cook or smells like BO or something, that's not a good thing. And I hope you enjoyed the condescending medical jokes. Thank you so much. I'll be here all week. Actually, that's true. And let me introduce some of the people that make this show possible. I do it every once in a while out of love. The theme music and the closing theme performed and composed by Jason Shaw. Much of the incidental music as well, incidentally, for this program. Thank you, Jason. You're a hell of a guy. And then there's announcer and comedy writer John Shanahan, who does many of the comedy bits. He's really the funny one. John Shanahan, of course, alias Jerome Charrington. And then there is my good friend, whom I don't know that well. She is also my social media manager, and I wish she'd get off my ass about that. Apparently, I'm not doing things right. But Nicole Reed, she's also the British voice that you hear at the beginning of the program. And those are just some of the people that make this show possible. Behind the scenes, there are many other people, but I keep them behind the scenes because they're fairly ugly. I said fairly ugly, not really ugly, just not my taste. Okay, thank you so much. Boom, 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 boom. Well, we're just a couple of days away from what holiday? Flag Day, that's right. When we take out our flags and wave them proudly, even though things are not going really well. Well, actually, they are. They are going well. Overseas, not so good. Here, inflation is going down. Gas prices going down. People are starting to get ahead of, with their paychecks, getting ahead of inflation all of a sudden. And got a president who has experience, knows what he's doing, doesn't want to destroy the country, wants to. I think it's great. So I think we're good right now. Let's leave it that way. Thank you very much. That's my political announcement. Now, let's move on to the show, which I had promised to do in one of my letters to you. Thursday is Thanksgiving. It is the holiday where we gather with family. fortunately, I'm in a position where my family is wonderful. I have been to many Thanksgiving gatherings when I was younger where that was not the case, where there were a few really mentally disturbed people in the family. You know, you can't have a large family without a couple of mentally disturbed people. And I mean that in a kind, humorous sense. Being mentally disturbed is certainly a problem, a horrible thing. I'm just trying to lighten things up. Maybe I shouldn't use the phrase mentally disturbed. Maybe I should say crazy sons of bitches. How about that one? That's a good one. I like that even better. That hits home and nails it, doesn't it? If the larger family you have, excuse me for clearing my throat, the larger the family you have, the more crazy sons of bitches you have in the family. There's nothing to argue about. That's a fact. It's in the dictionary, and it's online. If you only have like five or six people in the family, chances are you got a pretty good thing going. They're all relatively nice. But when you get up into the dozens range or 20 of family members, there are going to be a couple that are just going to bring the whole show down. You know what I'm saying? They're just going to ruin the entire, you know, a couple of pieces of mold in a large bowl of fruit eventually will take over the entire bowl of fruit. And that's what happens in large families. There's always going to be somebody that is the embarrassment of the family. They will be your dirty little secret, so to speak, if you know what I mean. So Thanksgiving is a gathering of these people in many circumstances. Some of them travel great distances to go to their Thanksgiving venue location, and that means some of them have to stay overnight, and that's where things get sticky. Now, immediate family members, beautiful, beautiful. Stay over all you want. The crazy cousins and people that don't come to your house often for a reason, they can't stay. They must leave. I don't even want them staying in hotels nearby because there's a chance they could come back. No, it's awful. It's awful. And let me tell you something, Ancestry.com crazy people. Those of you who are just overtaken by this ancestry thing, just because someone came from the same blood as you doesn't make them charming. Do you understand? Doesn't mean you're going to get along with somebody just because they're a relative. It does not work that way. As a matter of fact, it could be worse, because if you ran into somebody whom you didn't care for or did not want to have in your life whatsoever under any circumstances, you would just not pay attention to them and life would go on and you never see this person again. But if it's a family member, extended or not, that's a problem. That's an infliction upon your life, and it drills away at your head day and night. I can't believe I hate this person that much. I can't believe it. It's true. A first cousin, a second cousin, a third cousin, a fourth cousin. I don't know how many removed cousins there are. I'd like to remove all of them. I never got along with any of my cousins because I thought, what's your point? Why do I know you? Why are you connected to me? Through family relations that I don't even know. And step people, too. You're my stepfather. You're my stepmother. We're not related by blood. You're just a person who just hooked up with somebody who made bad choices. It's very, very difficult. But, you know, we always say in public, oh, I love my fam. And I happen to love my family, so I'm not kidding around. But I know other people who just, oh, no, you know. Behind their backs, they'll just malign them down to the gravy boat. But you know, in public, yeah. But in private, it's I don't know. It's a family holiday. Now, my guest later on in the program is going to talk about an aspect of family holidays. Holiday gatherings are a good time to discuss things that you don't discuss otherwise. And that can be a myriad of things. It can be about one's personality, something someone's doing wrong, planning for the future, intervention, you're a damn alcoholic, things like that. Little hints are dropped around the Thanksgiving table. And it can become quite vulnerable and horrible. And that's usually what happens when the alcohol kicks in. If you're going to drink alcohol at a family gathering, and how can you not, considering the stress of the actual event, then someone's going to say something that they shouldn't say. All the time that happens. Couple of drinks, people get very, very honest. That little thing called the filter, it's built into your head. It's part of your brain. There's a filter, and you should change the filter every year when you turn your clocks back. And your filter stops you from saying things that are going to cause tremendous trouble, arguments, and horrible, horrible results. When you're wearing the filter and the filter is working, if you think of something you want to say, then the filter says, nah, don't. It's not worth it. Don't even say it. It's just not worth it. And that's how the filter works in the brain. But if you have a drink or two or 17, that filter just seems to come loose. And you'll say something that you didn't mean to say, but at the time you really meant to say it, but otherwise you would not have said that. And once the floodgates are open, here come the water. It's like opening Pandora's box. I didn't know Pandora had a box. I think she did. I'm not familiar with that fairy tale, is it? Or whatever that is. Pandora had a box. No, not that box. Stop it. Stop it. She had a box, and in the box were just these horrible, horrible snakes and lizards, and the devil was in there, and large amounts of sugar, and horrible things in that box. And Pandora was about to open it, and everybody said, no, Pandora, don't. Once you open the box, it's all over. Don't you? You're releasing the evil spirits. And Pandora said, I don't have a filter, though. I don't care. I don't care about you, you sons of bitches. She actually would say that. And then she opened the box and out poured all this crap. I use the analogy frequently on this program because I like the analogy, therefore I shall use it. Just as you use things that you like to use, so don't get down on me like that. It's like trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's a good analogy because did you ever try to do that? You can't do that. Now, you can open a box and put things back in the box after you've opened it. So that Pandora thing, I'm not too sure about. But you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube once you've squeezed it out. You've got to use it and consume it. You cannot get it back in the tube. If you don't like the toothpaste, you've just wasted that toothpaste. You cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube. That's my analogy. I love it. You can use it too for $100 every time you use it because I have royalties on it. Actually, I heard it from somebody else, but they didn't claim it. They didn't claim dibs. What's with Pandora? What's up with her? I get confused. I've told you this before, but you probably didn't listen to me. Pandora is two large companies, and they're totally different. Pandora is a music streaming service. They call it Pandora. I don't know technically what it's called. Maybe it's Pandora Music. I really don't know, and I don't care. But it's branded Pandora. And I am on Pandora. This show is on Pandora. It's a streaming music thing. And podcasts such as this is from, you know, in one of its generations. And then there's Pandora, the jewelry company. It's a store. I think it's everything's online, so it's that too. It's jewelry. And that's Pandora. So when someone says, hey, you into Pandora? I say, are you talking about the music, the jewelry, or that woman in that fable. I don't know if there are any pictures of Pandora, but I'm guessing she's attractive. People in fables usually are. Otherwise, why would somebody bother? Except for that, the old woman who lived in the shoe, she had so many children, she didn't know what to do. I know what you could have done. Either get on birth control or get a bucket of cement and let's do some spackling. You didn't have so many children just by magic, unless you're Mother Mary or something, and I don't know who she is. I've read about her in a book. She lived in a manger. This particular lady lived in a shoe. Now, I don't know what size shoe it was or how many children she had, but it was not an optimal situation for her. Was she an immigrant from another country? I don't know. I have no idea. But she had so many children, she didn't know what to do. I don't know what happens in that little verse after that, because after that, it doesn't make any difference. This stupid lady had so many children that she lived in a shoe because she didn't know where else to live. I would have chosen pants, personally. I think you can fit more children in pants than you can in a shoe. That's quite obvious. So that little fable is just absolutely absurd, and I never want to hear it again. Just stop telling it to me. That fable, by the way, is also in the Bible, Leviticus chapter 7, verse 3. I don't go to church unless I'm being paid to as a wedding videographer, which I used to do. So I was paid to go to church, and I think that's the way it should be. I picked up stuff from church, you know, some good things, some good vibes, here and there. But I was paid to go, and I think they know that. I think they know that. I think if I went to a church by myself with no camera, people would turn around and say, what are you doing here? But when they see the camera, it's, oh, okay, he's being paid to be here. He's capturing things, fine, whatever. Church people are very, very nice to the point where it's excessive, but I guess that's wonderful. I'll take that these days as opposed to not. Very nice church people. On the wall in the church, they have the hymns. Hymns. On the wall, is that how you pronounce it? Or is it him or her or how do I pronounce it? On the wall, above the pulpit or to the side, it has the psalms. Are they psalms or songs or hymns? They're hymns. So when you got out your hymn book, you know which hymn is coming up next. It's like the program in a musical. Okay, we did that one. What's the next song? Oh, how many songs do we have here? There's five up there. All right, what are we on, three? All right, fine. I went to a performance last weekend in a church. It was a choir. Very, very good. Very, very good, by the way. They had an orchestra in the church, and they had these choir singers who were really good, and they had some soloists that they brought in, which were pretty good. Really, really nice. Problem is, they sang songs that I don't think are songs. They sang things, I think you call them things, by Handel, and by Brahms, and by Mozart. So I don't know what they were. They were hymnal things that these composers wrote. They all have to do with religion. They got to have Jesus or God or praise or something or disciples in every single line. And it's usually not in English. It's in some other language, which I believe is Latin, or I don't really know what it is, to be honest with you. Usually Italian, I don't really know. But it's not music that you walk away humming to yourself while you're cleaning the windows or doing housework. It just isn't. It's good music. but not for so long. You know, these compositions by Handel and Brahms and Mozart and all you other guys. No women. Did you notice that? No women. There were no women composers at all. No. There wasn't a Taylor Swift. There was nothing like that. They were all men, and pretty flimsy men at that, as I understand it. They wore wigs and powder on their face and had little moles that they put on, freckles on their face, on their cheeks on purpose. They wore ruffled shirts. I mean, velvet jackets. Excuse me. That's fine if that's, you know, if that's what you're into. So they were not exactly masculine, guys, you know, like, you know, anyway, they were very, very long. I guess you call them, are they songs? I don't even, you can't even call them songs. They were very, very long. They lasted like half an hour. It was like, thank God there were no radios back then. Maybe there were. I don't think there were. Marconi isn't even born yet. So they didn't play anything on the radio. They got orchestras play it. And I'm just wondering. And then people actually dance to it. It's like, whoa, you people are weird. Now it's Taylor Swift. I am, you know, I'm not a Swiftie in any sense of the word. Don't go there. Actually, I am a Swiftie in that sense. But in the musical Taylor Swiftie thing, no, I'm not. I'm familiar with a couple of her songs only because they've been drilled into my head. But other than that, no, they all sound the same to me. Some of them are short, but they're just songs. So I guess I can tolerate that. To each his own. I don't have to like everything that everybody does. But I'm starting to get this the situation where I've got Taylor Swift in my face in a nice way. Everything's Taylor Swift. She is possibly the richest woman now on the planet. I don't know. She's coming close. She's worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. So she works hard at what she does. She's extremely talented. I'll give her that. Not my cup of tea, not even my cup of coffee. I give her that, but everything's Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift. Come on, man. I mean, she's innovative, marketing. Wow, she knows how to do this thing. But she's invading my psyche here. You know, I feel like she's, I need a restraining order against her mentally. I just do. I mean, everything's about her these days. Wow. But you know what? If young kids, Swifties, I must call them, if young kids idolize Taylor Swift, Taylor can, you know, wear some sexy kind of not, you know, it's like Cher. She was like a regular person. All of a sudden she became this sexy bombshell sleaze. Madonna was that all the time. Hannah Montana there, that girl. She started out as Hannah Montana, and then she turns into a sleaze and starts, I don't know. Taylor's, I hope she's not on her way to that. I mean, she does dress a little tiny sleazy. But I do, I want people to have role models. We need role models. We do. See, that's where Joe Biden's a good role model. He's good. The other one, the Trumpish one, role model, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Role models are important. People have to look up to somebody, especially when they're younger. They need to tailor themselves after somebody else. There you go again. She's got her name even in that. All right. We've got to go to our interview. We just do. And we're going to talk about getting around the Thanksgiving table and bringing up, ancestor stuff. It's important that you know what your relatives are medically, because doctors are asking these questions now. And if you don't know, then they don't know either. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. But first, we're going to take this very short commercial break. I swear it won't take long at all. And shake. It's probably just going to be about a minute, so nothing really horrible. Speaking of churches.
Hello, this is Father Mike Slannery from the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church here in town, and I'm excited to tell you about a thrilling new addition to our monthly Friday night bingo game lineup. In addition to classic favourites like Coverall and Four Corners, we'll now be adding Full Contact Bingo. That's right, Full Contact. That's where the friendly community game you love meets the hard-hitting action of football and hockey that you crave. Is Mrs. Smith about to call bingo before you? Hit her with a cross check or crash her into the boards. I should mention that all full contact games will take place in the street hockey rink behind the parish function hall where the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Fighting Sons of Leviticus hold their matches. Protective gear is recommended and weapons are not allowed. And if you feel bad about taking out a friend or neighbour so you can win a few bucks at the bingo, I will be on hand to take your confession. That all starts next Friday night at the parish hall at the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church, 27 Eucharist Way, right downtown. We'll see you there.
Ashley Dedman is here. She's breast cancer provider. And Susan Manley is a senior VP of medical service at Myriad Genetics. What is a provider, Ashley?
That's a great question. A provider is someone who's at a higher risk of cancer due to either family history or a gene mutation, but the disease has not occurred or they have not been diagnosed.
Okay.
So that's a breast cancer provider.
Okay, interesting. I've learned something today at the very beginning of the interview. That's good. Okay, let's talk about let's talk about a couple of holidays that are coming up. But it's not a cooking segment; it's a knowledge segment, especially Thanksgiving. I'm a little bit older than the both of you, probably. And in those days, parents never divulged their medical history to anybody, probably not even to each other. It was not their business. It was extremely private. And we have an entire generation of people walking around not knowing what their parents' history was or their grandparents'. Fortunately, you're here to change that. Is that right?
We'd like to try. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So family gathers around Thanksgiving should be more frequently, but certainly that holiday. And it's an opportunity to learn, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to learn about your family's health history is very important for your own health. And knowing that you have a family history of certain medical conditions can help you be proactive about your own risks for those conditions. Families share DNA, they share genes, and so they also share those genes that may increase risk for things like breast cancer or colon cancer. So knowing that you have a family history of breast, ovarian, colon, or endometrial cancer can mean that you're at risk for these cancers too. And knowing that information can help you be more proactive with your healthcare providers to manage that risk for cancer. So it might be difficult to talk about that with families, but it can be positioned as less about curiosity about what's happening to others, but more as trying to be proactive about your own health.
Mm-hmm. There are certain types of cancer screenings that everybody should do, whether they know their history or not. The colon cancer, the breast cancer, these should be regularly checked anyway. Are we talking about that as well, or are we talking about the cancers that may not be checked on a regular basis?
Well, both really. That's a good point. So breast cancer and colon cancer screenings are recommended for the general population.
Yes, yes.
But for people that have a family history of cancers, including breast and colon, but also cancers like ovarian cancer, which aren't regularly screened for necessarily, or endometrial cancer, people with a family history of those cancers and certainly a gene mutation that increases risk for those cancers qualify for more frequent screening and also different types of screening than the general population would get. So certainly it's important for everybody to think about mammograms and colonoscopies, but with a family history of cancer or a gene mutation, there's more interventions that can be done.
Ashley, were you aware of this? How did you find out and become proactive?
That's a great question. My mother was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And prior to that, I knew that her great-grandmother had breast cancer also. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until after my mother passed away from metastatic breast cancer and my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer that I learned that my mother's grandmother also had breast cancer. And so now I'm seeing multiple breast cancers on my mother's side and now my father, who's now diagnosed with prostate cancer. And he's a survivor, and I'm so glad that he's still here with us and doing well. But all of this family history had me very concerned and even fearful for my own life because I did not want to be next. My OBGYN did a great job with having this conversation with me early on and always told me if my family history changed or if I found out additional information to call her immediately and not to wait for that annual exam. For me, knowing that I carry a BRCA2 mutation means that my standard of care looks different. Mm-hmm. And also being a mother of two young daughters also has helped inform me and also will help inform them of their family history and of their potential risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and other cancers. And so it was really important that I knew my family history because it really gave me a blueprint and a path forward for how I approach my medical health with my doctors.
It's a very good point. But fortunately, medical technology has advanced so far and is advancing still so fast that caught early, these things can be eradicated. And that wasn't the case prior. So, the testing is key, and then you're good, right?
Well, the first step is collecting your family history and bringing it to the attention of your physician, like Ashley did. So then your physician can create a plan that works for you, which includes screening, but also can include genetic testing. Mm-hmm. And so genetic testing is a more accurate way to determine more specifically your risks for breast cancer or colon cancer, ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer. And as I mentioned, knowing that you're at higher risk, the interventions that can be done might look different than compared to the general population.
Sure.
And the genetic test is a simple blood or saliva test, a very simple collection. And then we look for a number of different genes that are involved in increased risk for cancer.
Now, how does one go about doing this? You do it through your physician, or is this something you do at home to start the process?
This test that we're talking about is a test that is only ordered by a healthcare provider.
Okay, good.
So there are some genetic tests that can be done at home, but this one is done in conjunction with your healthcare provider, because if we find something in the genetic test, then your doctor or healthcare provider can order the subsequent screenings and follow-on tests to make sure that they're managing your risk appropriately.
Very good. I don't think you have the numbers, but through interviews that I've done, I found that more than half of America has a condition or a precondition that should be tended to on a regular basis. And most of them don't even know that. I mean, this is not a strange out of field situation. It happens to a lot of people are affected by these genetic situations.
Absolutely. It's more common than we probably realize.
Yes.
And therefore it's more important than ever to really know what your family history of medical conditions are, specifically cancer, but any condition, diabetes, heart disease, memory loss, things like that are really important to talk to your family about, and then talk to your healthcare provider. Again, just to do the most that you can to mitigate your risks.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that's it. The holidays coming up. Give them a drink or something, you know, and then when they're relaxed, ask them the questions. There's ways to do this. I use that method for a lot of things. Okay. All right. Seriously, though, it is important, and it's harmless, and it's just conversation, but do it, and that way things can be better. Okay. Where can we go for more information?
You can go to myriad.com/knowyourhistory. And we have resources on our website that include a discussion guide as well as a family history tree that you can fill out with your family members.
Wonderful.
Over that drink at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yes, in moderation. Okay.
Yes, of course.
And Ashley, thanks for sharing your story. I think you've helped a lot of people here, and that's important. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guests, and thank you to you. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.